Okay, now, Dublin, will you come up and read the history? Right here.
Hi, I'm Dublin. Origin of the La Cañada's Men's 7 O'Clock Let's Rock Al-Anon by Al-Anonic Pat, founding member. In the summer of 1991, my wife, Candy, okay, I'm reading it like I'm Pat, so it's going to say I'm not Pat, so anyway. In the summer of 1991, my wife, Candy, and I decided to take our first vacation since she got sober in November 1989. We traveled toward the Great Northwest and through 9 western states. Our first stop was in the town of Morro Bay, where we spent the night. Candy had seemed a little squirrely and asked if we might check out an AA meeting in the town. We did so and decided that for the rest of our trip, we would go to an AA or Al-Anon meeting in every state we visited. Upon returning to California some weeks later, we found our last stop in Palm Springs. We found an AA meeting and an Al-Anon meeting at the Betty Ford Treatment Center. I had talked to an Al-Anon member afterwards, and he asked me if I would like to attend his Al-Anon men's group the next night. I decided to decline since Candy and I were anxious to get home. On the drive back to La Cañada that night, I was complaining to Candy about my men's Al-Anon group. It was a Monday night meeting in San Marino that started at 8:30. It was approximately 20 miles from my house, and after the meeting, I usually didn't get home until around midnight. I had a 7 a.m. class to teach the next morning and resented the fact that I needed to get up at 5:30 a.m. to make that happen. For those who just came in, I am not Pat, but I'm reading it as if I'm Pat. So after ranting and raving for about 15 minutes, Candy had grown tired of listening to me and said, "Hey, why don't you quit your whining and start a men's Al-Anon meeting here in La Cañada?" And started at
7 o'clock.
What a concept. The rest is history. We had our first meeting on Thursday, October 10, 1991, in Harris Hall, a small room in the back of the La Cañada Presbyterian Church. As I recall, there were about a dozen men or so at that first meeting, half of which came from the San Marino men's group to lend support for the first meeting. The only other man that attended that first meeting and is still an active member today was
Willie.
Smart group here. Within a few months, Jack H., Ron R., and Jack C. joined our group. Are they here today? Jack, is he still cleaning up? Is he here? Ron, where are you? Thank you. Joined our group and have all been instrumental in making our meeting the best damn men's Al-Anon group in the world. As a side note, some people have asked me how our meeting, 7 o'clock Let's Rock, got its name. Willie had returned from a World Service conference and reported that we needed to have a name for our group. He said, "Maybe we can call it the La Cañada Men's Kick-Ass Group." After a brief discussion, we decided that Central Office probably would not let us print that in the meeting directory. One of my favorite songs back in the late 70s was "Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting" by Elton John. Some of the lyrics contained in the first part of the song are, "It's 7 o'clock and I want to rock. I want to get a belly full of beer. My old man is drunker than a barrel full of monkeys, and my old lady, she don't care." I thought to myself, wow, if this isn't a song about alcoholism, I don't know what is. Hence the name.
7 o'clock.
Okay, I'd like to do something real quick here. I'd like to see how many men have been coming to this meeting for 5 years. Stand so we can see you. Okay. What about at least 10 years? Okay. At least 15 years. At least 20 years. Now, and, you know, I was here at the beginning, so the rest of us stroll in. And that's what makes this meeting pretty strong. You know, two things I think earmarks this meeting. One is that we pride ourselves in being the only male group that I know of that have babysitting. Gimmick? Can I get a show of hand all the men who take advantage of that babysitting? Yeah. And, you know, it's been, sometimes I go places, or my wife sometimes, you know, attend a meeting, and they say that this meeting, because it's large, is, you know, it's clickish, it's got a bunch of clicks. And I say you can look at it from a different point of view, which they have taught us to do here in Al-Anon. It may just be that this is a group of men that's bonding. Think about that. So now, David, is you going to introduce our speaker? Okay.
Hi, my name's David.
Yeah.
I get to be your speaker bookie for this meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm not taking volunteers.
It is
my pleasure. Let's please give a warm 7 o'clock Let's Rock welcome to our speaker, Nancy C. from Downey.
I'm Nancy, I'm an Al-Anon. Thanks for having me. Oh my God, wow, when you flip around, it's crazy packed in here. Wow, I'm really grateful to be here. I love Al-Anon and what it has done for me, my family, all the people I come into contact with, thank you. And I love the laughter of this room. I love the history. I love the traditions that you guys have here. I have never heard of this meeting. I go to a Thursday night meeting in Westchester. That's the one I started at, and that's the one I've always gone to. And it's just like, wow, there's other meetings. Like, shocking to me, but it's fantastic. It's a whole nother world. I'm so grateful. I wasn't laughing when I got to Al-Anon January 20th of 1994. I was really, really bitter and upset, and I had been for 2 years. It just kept getting worse and worse. And what happened, how I got to Al-Anon was my husband, who had been sober many years, returned to drinking after taking a Vicodin for some migraine headaches. He had been going to less and less meetings, and he took a Vicodin, and he ended up drinking. And one day when I was, he had gone to the hospital for I don't know what, but some kind of breathing difficulty, which turns out if you take that many Vicodin, it slows down everything. But I didn't know that at the time. And so I had to go move his car from the restaurant to where he was working because he was in the hospital, which seriously, I could have cared less. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was so angry and resentful at all the stuff that had been happening, how he'd changed and everything, that I was just like, oh, he's in the hospital. You know, I'm just, whatever. And oh my God. Even today, everything has changed in her life. But if he gets sick, he calls his ex-wife. I love it. She's so good. I love her. Because of Al-Anon, we have a great relationship. And I'm just like, Lisa, you know, we're going to the hospital. And so anyway, yeah. So I get in the car and I drive to the hospital and I put on the brakes, and all these pill bottles roll out from underneath the seat, you know, and they were talking big, giant pill bottles of Vicodin. So I'm like, oh my God, he's using, like, I knew something was wrong. I just inherently knew, but I just kept, you know, it's just like, oh, it can't be that. He had alcohol in the back of his truck, in the back of his trunk once, and I'm just like, oh, it must be, because he managed a restaurant, Olive Garden at the time. And I'm just like, oh, it just must be for the people at work. Just the crazy things that I used to say something wasn't happening. And And shortly after that, I got a phone call from a little gal that said, I'm having an affair with your husband and I want it to stop. And, you know, we had this beautiful wedding and this beautiful relationship. You know, he was sober. It was a fantastic life. You know, people at our house all the time. It was a beautiful, beautiful life. And all my heart's desires had come true with this, you know, this great guy and this great little girl. And it just came to a screeching halt when this happened. And I wanted to divorce him. And I couldn't, so I just contented myself with making his life a living hell every single day. And God, I really did not know I had that in me. I swear to God, I did not know I had that in me. I was, you know, I was just so blind to my deformities. I was so blind. This probably happened when I was maybe about 38 years old. I got to Al-Anon when I was 40. I was just so blind to anything being wrong with me. My ego and my pride had just blown me up into this, you know, perfect, I'm just like perfect. And, you know, it just, unbelievable. And anyway, so everybody, we went to counseling. Everybody said you should divorce him. Everybody, even including his mother, said he's got a history of being, you know, unfaithful back when he was drinking. You should divorce him. It's just like everybody. And I really wanted to. And, you know, I'm so grateful today that I stayed, even though it was really bad for a long time for him. If you accidentally came to our house, it was like a haunted house. You know, when you see the movies, the kids go in the haunted house and everything slams shut, the doors and all the blinds. That's what would happen. If you walked into our house, it was just like a house of hell craziness. It's like we weren't talking to each other, but we were coexisting, right? You know, it's just like the tension was so thick, it just got worse and worse. And I'm grateful today because of what happened in my story is that it was the catalyst for me to see something about myself, which I was not grateful for. Because how in the world, when they talk about justified resentments, how in the world can cheating on your partner not be a justified resentment? How? How? You know what I mean? That's justified. Right? And so I hung on to that one for a long time. And what happened is my world just kept getting smaller and smaller. And people would say, hey, Nancy, what's up? How you doing? I'd say, you know what he did today? When I searched the car today and found he's still smoking pot. I mean, it's just like my whole world became about what he was doing. I had this big, giant life. I was the, you know, first woman manager for my company. I just have this big life, a lot of people, a lot of friends, and it just shrunk. That's the only thing I can say. My obsession with what he was doing and what he wasn't doing, you know. And so finally someone gave me the claw, put their hands on my shoulder, looked at me and said, people had said it before, but I just deflected it. You need Al-Anon, chicken, whatever. And he needs AA. That's what's up, right? He needs AA. He's drinking. You know what I mean? Hello. And so finally someone looked at me and I was ready to hear it. And I heard it and I got to Al-Anon and I was miserable. And what I loved from my very first Al-Anon meeting, you know, it talks about spiritual first aid. And that's what I got at my very first meeting. I heard laughter. And I, you know, when I would throw up my story again, you know, what brings you to God? I'd throw up my story. Not a single person in Al-Anon said, now I wanted to divorce him. That's what I kept saying. I'm going to divorce him. Which finally, when I got a sponsor, she, you know, I'd say, I'm going to divorce him. And then finally she said, well, are you going to divorce him today? Well, no, not today, but I am going to divorce him. And she said, the day that you're going to divorce him, I support you and we'll go together and we will take the actions to divorce him. Is that today? No. Then today you need to take these different actions, you know. And I was willing when she said that. But the spiritual first aid I got was laughter. And people said, we understand. Nobody out there understands cheating. Nobody says, oh, yeah, well, you know, you probably had a part in it. Nobody. Nobody. So everybody that I'm talking to is justifying my resentment. I'm just getting mad because every time I tell the story, everyone's like, yeah, what a cheater. Yeah, he's a jerk. You should leave him. Yeah, yeah. I'm just, you know, getting bigger, prideful, crazy balloon of resentment, huge, floating off into Crazyville, right? And, but I didn't see it. I didn't see it. I did not see it because I was so focused on what he did wrong. And anyway, so, you know, I started coming to the meetings and I started, you know, I got a sponsor and I started, you know, taking the steps around here. And, you know, my idea of Al-Anon was, like, I first, when I knew about alcoholism, I thought an alcoholic, a real alcoholic, was someone that was on Skid Row with a, you know, paper bag around a wine bottle. I thought that's what an alcoholic was. And I thought that my vision of Al-Anons, which I knew nothing about, was, you know, mostly women, you know, doormat type women that, you know, my husband cheated on me, but I love him, right? And I didn't feel that way. I was a crazy, crazy person. And the first meeting I went to was on step two, and I heard my sponsor-to-be share, and she said, you know, sometimes I just want to rip my husband's head off and holler down his neck. What are you thinking? And I found the Al-Anons of my type, you know. One time I told my sponsor I didn't want to be disrespected. I didn't want to be a doormat. And she said, oh, the only time you're a doormat is when, you know, someone steps on you and then you jump up and whirl them around like you're anticipating being stepped on. You're not, humble people can't be disrespected. And I really didn't know what she was talking about, but I have an understanding today. And so I started taking the steps and, you know, I was at that meeting. I got there in January and there was a woman at that meeting that she used to make, she owned a boutique and she would make little fancy cards that were blank inside and she was made Valentine's cards and she gave one to every person at the meeting so they could give to whoever they wanted to. And I remember she gave me a Valentine card, so it must have been within my first few weeks. And I just wanted to rip it up and throw it at her and say, oh my God, you know what I mean? I do not love my husband. I'm not going to give him a Valentine card at all. And, you know, after I was a few years in Al-Anon, I was able to, that changed for me. And I was able to, now even some of those mushy cards, they kind of get to me. But, you know, I love you since I first met you. That's not my, but, you know, I'm able to get a card. I'm able to get a card that expresses my feelings. But I just remember the contempt and venom I had. And, you know, I started working the steps and, you know, I was still going to divorce him every day. And, you know, just my first moment of clarity was one day I was going to my meeting and we had a little daughter and she was about maybe 4 or 5 years old. And I was giving her a bath and he said, go ahead and go to your meeting and I'll finish bathing her. And I said, okay. And so, you know, I get ready and I go out and I pass the bathroom and they're laughing, having a great time. And I said, as I walked out, just a casual remark, just like I like to make, don't use too much cream rinse, right? And I go out and I get in my car and I go to put the key in the ignition. And I'm like, oh my God. Right now, I've been at Al-Anon long enough to hear some women had to fight their husbands to come to Al-Anon. They didn't want them going. They had a misconception that we were talking about them at the meetings and, you know, all that. And then other women, they could go, but the kid had to, like, be in bed, even if it was 6 o'clock at night, right? The kid had to be bathed in their pajamas for them to go. And I have a husband that is happy for me to go. They're having a fantastic time. He's happy. He's taken care of it with no problem. And I have something to say about a nickel's worth of Suave cream rinse, right? Don't use too much cream rinse. It's like, oh my God. Just the lights went on. I had something to say about everything he does. My husband used to tell me, every time I jump through your hoop, you make the hoop smaller, right? Like, oh, it's over here. Now it's on fire. You know what I mean? Like, to do it right so I'll be okay. You know what I mean? And you know, I'm convinced if I was married to Jesus today, he'd be out of those sandals and shaved right away. Like, we're changing all this. I can't live like this. But I didn't see was before. I did not see it. I just couldn't take my eyes off what was happening with him. And, you know, I'm just so grateful. You know, I started to do my inventory. And one of the things I saw in my inventory is I had a crazy, crazy life before I met my husband, a lot of stuff. And one time I was with this crazy guy. I was always with violent men. I don't know how I kept attracting them, but I did. And I was the innocent victim. And, you know, as we know, and thank God for strong sponsorship, from the very moment I got to Al-Anon, my sponsor told me the truth about myself and about myself and about myself. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, it just took a long time for her to get through that chink that I had, that my ego had. But anyway, when I finally did my fourth step, this one guy that I had, this crazy guy, we'd gotten this big old fight, and he had grabbed a big butcher knife, and he had chased me, and I had ended up running outside in the street in my underwear, a big dramatic story while he tried to stab me. And of course, I had to talk my way back into the house. We made up and blah, blah, blah. But I had told that story a million times, but when I wrote about it in my inventory, this is the first time I wrote the story down, and I remembered as I'm writing that right before he grabbed the butcher knife, I had gone over to him, and I had taken the beer, and I had just gone over to him, and I just dumped it on his head. And he overreacted, right? You know, but I probably, if I went and put a cup of water on your head, you'd say, "What the hell? I got my special hat on. What's wrong with you, girl?" Right? I mean, you probably wouldn't say, "I'm going to pray for you," right? You know what I mean? You would have, most people would have at least a bad reaction. They probably wouldn't grab a butcher knife. But you know what I mean? Like, so what was magical was it started to put that chink in me that where I could see that I had a part in what had happened to me. I had a part in what had happened to me. And, you know, this went on and on. And finally what happened is, you know, I was able to see that, you know, when I had my daughter and my desire to be a good mom, I just wanted to be a good mom. And I had had her, I didn't have her till I was 35, which is young now, but back then it seemed like it was old. And we tried for a long time to have a kid. She was like my miracle baby. And I just wanted to be a good mom. And so I lavished attention on her. I made her my partner, my mate, my intimacy. I didn't really mean to do anything against him. I just switched my obsession from him to her, and she became my everything. So now in our bed, it's not Nancy and Mickey in the marital bed. It's Nancy, Kelsey, and Mickey, right? And you know we're not going to have sex because the little princess is going to wake up. And, you know, suddenly, instead of having her revolve around me, I'm revolving around her, right? And I was misguided, and I didn't know that that wasn't the right thing. I just made her everything. And so, you know, he was lonely, and he was hurting. And this went on for a long, long time. It doesn't make it right for anybody to cheat on anybody, but being able to see that I had a part in that I had a part in the demise of our marriage. And that, and also my sponsor used to tell me, "Nancy, even when you're right, the way you're right is always wrong." And because I'm not just, you know, yeah, it was a left turn. I'm like, "Told you, it was a left turn." You know, if you'd listen to me, you would know that if you should always listen to me. And just like I would argue to the death about anything. So just like, and I would just go on and on and on and on till you just, you know, it doesn't really make it right that anybody hit me. But looking back, it doesn't make it right. Violence is crazy and bad. But there was some times where my boyfriends would say, "Please leave me alone. Please go away." They would try to go away. One of my boyfriends went in the bathroom and shut the door and said, "Please go away." "Oh, I know you're in there. You know, I know you're in there." But, and, you know, it's just like I created my own problems. I did not know that. I created my own problems. And, one of the things that I've learned in Al-Anon is to, we all know to say, "You could be right." And so I was sponsoring this gal, and we were working the steps, and we were, you know, out talking about the steps, and she had a husband that suffers from alcoholism, and so we were talking about how he, you know, goes on and on, and I said, "Well, you know, what has really worked for me is to just say, 'You could be right.'" And so we were talking about that, and so then we come in to have dinner, so it's my husband and me, my daughter Kelsey, and this gal Sabrina, and so we're just having pleasantries at the dinner table. And the conversation came up to why my daughter couldn't walk to school. I said, "Well, she could never walk to school because there's no sidewalks on this one street where we live in Downey. It's kind of a busy street." And he goes, "On Gallatin?" I go, "Yeah, on Gallatin." He says, "Oh, there's sidewalks." And I go, "No, there's not." And he goes, "Yes, there is." And I go, "No, there's not." And he goes, "Yes, there is." And I'm getting ready to push back from the table because, I'm going to get in the car right now. Because this has to be proved, right? Because this is life and death. This must be proved. And so I look over and Sabrina's eyes are like this, right? Because she's looking to me for some hope, right? And I said, you could be right. And people, it was like, he didn't say like I might have, yeah, right. The conversation just shifted like nothing had happened. And we looked at each other. We still remember that moment. It was magical. It's like, oh my God, this thing really works. But this, I never had seen that before. How I was all the time, long before I met my husband. I owned all this, just being right all the time. It's annoying. It's awful. And I had no clue that I was like that. And I started to see that, you know, how I really was. And, one time when I was going to divorce him, and my sponsor had me write down 77 good things about my husband, which I didn't know how she picked that number, but probably just, you know, she was frustrated with me, I'm sure, because... So I had a week to do it, and the next week I came back, and I had three. And I really had tried hard. And number one was good father. Number two, I don't remember. And number three was good dad. She's like, it was pretty, if I'd have hid one in the 77, she might not have noticed, but she noticed right away. And she said, you get back and do it. And I was forced to look. How sad that is, that I was forced to look for these qualities in my husband, because I have the keen Al-Anon mind that it has the ability to look at what is not right and blow it up, and look at what is right and shrink it down. You know, my husband, he gets up for work really early. And so as to not disturb me in the bedroom, he would take all his clothes out to the front room and put him on the couch, and takes a shower in the front bathroom because, you know, I'm, you know, a light sleeper. And he'd get dressed out in the front room. And this happened every day. And I would come out every day when I woke up at my leisurely 7:30-ish. And I come out, and what do I see on the couch but the coat hanger? You know what I mean? I don't see the coat hanger as a symbol of my loving husband who so generously got up and, you know, did that in uncomfortable living room. I see, he's like, I can't believe he left that coat hanger there. I mean, that's my normal go-to without you. That is how I think without my treatment. My Al-Anonism demands treatment. I need this program so much. You know, it's just, I came here because my husband's drinking was bothering me, and then he got sober, and his sobriety bothered me, and now I bother me. And everything else, I am crazy. And I do a lot of work around this program. I am really busy, active in this program to still be this crazy. So to the newcomers, I've kind of felt bad because I'm like, oof, I'm in the remedial group, whatever. And, so things started to change, and I fell back in love with my husband again as a result of Al-Anon. I was able to make my amends. And when I made my amends, I was ready, and I was so ashamed of what I had brought to the marriage. And, you know, I love our program because I was, you know, it says setting aside the wrongs others have done. I was able to completely set aside what he had done as a result of the steps and see what I had done to our marriage as a result of who says it's the right thing to make your daughter more important than your husband. Who says it's okay to stop having sex with your partner? Is that okay? Is that right? And all I could focus on was what he had done. I didn't take right actions, right? Doesn't make it right, but I could see my part. And we sat down, and I apologized, and I said, you know, and I was ashamed of what I had done to our marriage, and I apologized. And since that day, the jealousy, the resentment, I never thought about it again. I never think about it again. I'm completely free of it. And I thought about it all day, every day, for years. 2 years before I got to Al-Anon, probably another good, I don't know, year and a half before the steps finally took a hold, before I finally did the meds. I thought about it, I can guarantee you, every day, all day. It was an obsession of what he did, how he hurt me, how he's wrong, blah, blah, blah. It was lifted, you know, as a result of making the amends to him. And, you know, and as a result of starting to take my eyes off of him and doing my own thing, God was able to get through to my husband, because I'm really so loud and obnoxious that, you know, God was trying to sweetly whisper, Mickey, come back to AA. And I'm like, I got this, God. You need to go to a meeting. You know, I mean, it would be hard to hear the sweet whisper of his higher power because I was telling him what to do all day, every day. And when I stopped, as a result of seeing how much was wrong with me, that I could not change or control, just, you know, wanting to be different, you know, I can't stop being self-centered because I want to. You know, my little daughter is, she has, well, she's not little anymore, but when she was little, she had ADHD, probably still does. And she was, you know, really, really hyper, and we struggled. I'll get into that, but she used to have to take medication. It was really a tough time. And every single morning, it would go like this: Kelsey, go get ready for school. So she'd go, and by the time she got to her bedroom, she'd stop and touch Michelle's hair, and then she'd do a somersault, and then she'd open the cupboard, and by the time she got to the bedroom, she'd forgotten why she was there, right? She's already forgotten. So it'd be like, Kelsey, why are you yelling? Big fight, crying, and dropping her off at school crying every day. And so I come up, I'm like, it's all going to be different, right? So I bring Kelsey into the bedroom and I say, Kelsey, and I tell her, I said, we're going to do this differently. We're going to be calm in the morning and we're just going to get ready for school. You're really, really hyper today. Can you see that you're hyper? Yes, mommy. Okay. So you're just going to get your backpack and get your stuff in it. Then you're going to get your lunch and we're going to get ready and we're going to do our days differently and we're going to go to school. Okay. Do you understand? Yes, mommy. You're very, very hyper today. Okay, mommy. I understand, mommy. Okay. All right, so I had my hands on her in the loving claw of love, you know, touching her like this. And so I take my hands off, say, okay, we're going to get ready. And she goes, okay, mommy. And then she goes like this. Don't be hyper, 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 don't be hyper. And that's me. This is a spiritual program. I have to be empowered to be what I'm powerless to be. She could no more not be hyper because she wanted to. She has an illness, then I cannot be self-centered or heinous or controlling because I want to. Okay, I'm not going to control anymore. Hello, I can't do it on my own. Don't be controlling, don't be controlling, don't be controlling. I can't do it on my own unaided will. If I could have done that, I can guarantee you I wouldn't be at the Let's Rock meeting on Thursday night. I'd be home watching all the shows I DVR'd, which I never get to see. It's okay. I love this program. Every day I just cross off one at the bottom and just hope for the best. I never get to see him, but I have a fantastic life. Plus, the stuff that you hear in these meetings are better than any show I've ever watched. I swear to God. You want reality TV? Boom, this is what's up. So, anyway, I have to be empowered to be different and, you know, get a different relationship. And so, you know, I struggled for a long time with my kid. It took a long time for the obsession to go. My sponsor told me that she had never seen anyone more obsessed with their kid than I was with mine. And, you know, I was like, I'm the best at something. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't a good thing. I'm like, I'm still in my, you're a good mom thing. Well, what mom shouldn't be heavily involved with their kid's life, right? This mom, because I'm crazy mom. I'm an obsessed mom. And, you know, one year, my kid didn't get invited to a birthday party, and all the popular kids got to go. So I used to work, I manage a restaurant, so I work on the weekends, and I'm off during the week. One of my big things is I always wanted to be a teacher, which I kind of got diverted. But I was able to go and volunteer in the schools on my days off. So I was always room mom and all that kind of stuff. So I was able to see every painful thing that happened to my kid as a result of her hyperactivity and her, you know, so I would just, you know, take that home with me. And my sponsor would go, Nancy, you need to get down off of her path, because I would put myself on her path and it would cause me pain. But anyway, you know, there were some things I just didn't tell her because I didn't want the direction, right? And so she didn't get invited to this birthday party. She was maybe 10 years old, and it was all the popular kids, which of course I was obsessed with getting her in with the popular group. Another big mistake, right? And, you know, she didn't want to play an instrument like I did when I was a kid. And I'm like, okay, none of the popular kids. You know, just, I made so many mistakes. And I think about that now. My natural go-to way of thinking, you know, like I said before, you know, I go to a lot of meetings. I pray. I work with others. I take phone calls. I work the steps in this program. And every night when I lay my head on the pillow, it's usually a pretty good day. I'm usually pretty grateful. God's been in my day most of the time. If I owe an amends, I'm pretty good at saying it. But at night while I'm sleeping, that ego fairy blows me full up every night to where I'm a prideful balloon the next day. And it's scary because I think that if I think it, it's right. Right? Like, I know if you say, Nancy, is your thinking good? I'm going to tell you, no, I absolutely know that my thinking is not good. But my normal thinking is to not think that. Right? So I just automatically think I know what's best. And in this case, with the way I raised my daughter, I'm not saying it was all wrong. I made a lot of mistakes thinking that I knew what was best. But that arrogance and that assumption that for me is an Al-Anon characteristic big time is thinking I know that I know what's best for me, for you, for everybody. And that's exhausting for me to try to run the world as well as annoying to everyone. And so anyway, so she didn't get invited. So that night when the party was happening, I pull up and it's this beautiful house on this right on the corner in Downey where I live. And it, and they people had just bought this house. It's like a 200-year-old house. It's just a beautiful mansion. And they didn't have the curtains up yet, right? So I'm on the street. I didn't take my kid. I'm not that bad. But I sat up there in the car. I'm not stalking my husband at the bars. I'm looking in through the windows and watching the popular kids whirl and twirl around dancing. Just taking a knife and stabbing myself. And who brings that kind of pain on themselves? Me. Why? This is craziness. Who does that, right? Just making myself sick with why she didn't get invited. What's wrong with my kid? What's wrong with me? You know, and oh my God, you know, my kid really struggled and, you know, just, oh, so many things happened with her, but I was always trying to make her be different. And, you know, one time our whole family went out, it was Mother's Day, and we went to Claim Jumper. And I have two younger brothers and a younger sister. All normies, all regular people. And so everybody's at the dinner table, and everybody's, the kids are all talking. My one niece that's my daughter's age, maybe she was 11 or 12 years old, she's doing her homework, her algebra homework at the table. And her sister had come up with a newsletter for the whole family, and she was selling subscriptions, and she was writing a very beautifully formatted, she was maybe eight, newsletter for the whole entire family. My other little nephew, he was five at the time, and he rides motocross, and so they had all his stuff there. My other niece, she won first place in the barrel racing, you know, horses for the state of California. She's got all her pictures in a big folder and binder. And then the coup de grace, my one niece, she was on the front page of her private school. Their website. Paige Miller, age 8, reads at a 12th grade level. So she's down there reading this book that even I probably couldn't have read, right? She's thumbing through it, and her mom goes, Paige, join the conversation, right? And I look to see what Kelsey's doing. She's coloring the kids' menu like this. Right? This is what I bring, right? This is my best mothering, right? I don't have a single award. I've got nothing. And I was in despair. I was so upset about that. And I called my sponsor, and my sponsor had to point out to me all the lovely gifts of my daughter, including... you know, one day this girl in our group, she was really struggling, and she had been out there for a really long time and couldn't get back to the program. And everybody was at a meeting. My whole home group was at a meeting, and our Friday night meeting. And so this gal, Lisa, called, and my daughter took the call. And she called, that's, I think, before cell phones. And she knew that the girl was in trouble, and she knew that she was hurting. She was maybe, I don't know, 11 or 12. And she tracked everybody down and got their, you know, the rescue bus to come and get this girl and take her to a meeting. Like, she knew the seriousness of it because she'd been raised in program. And my sponsor had to point that out to me. Like, I can't see that on my own. You know, I have to have you guys tell me what's right in my life. You know, I have not outgrown, obviously, Al-Anon. I need it even more than ever to have you guys superimpose sanity on insanity. By my sponsor, by hearing your shares, and, you know, to say that's, there's something wrong with that thinking. She has her own beautiful gifts. And, you know, she used to get in so much trouble and, you know, struggled with, you know, I used to hear at meetings, you know, when I'd go to open AA meetings, I I, you know, you hear people share, and I used to start hearing people share. They started drinking when they were 13. And I'm like, oh, my God. People start drinking when they're 13. And, oh, my God, Kelsey's going to start drinking when she's 13, right? So I call my sponsor. And I go, oh, my God, Kelsey's – everybody starts drinking when they're 13. You know what I mean? You know, she's got – she's going to be an alcoholic. I'm just sure of it, right? And my sponsor said, well, how old is she today? And I'm like, well, she's 11. But she's going to start drinking when she's 13. Well, how old is she today? She's 11, but you did not hear me. She's going to start drinking when she's 13. And my sponsor's just like, you know, maybe that's going to be true. But this is a day at a time program, right? We're not looking, we're looking to just stay in today. And, you know, I just worried about her a lot, and she did a lot of bad stuff. You know, one time I'm talking to a neighbor, and she goes, oh, my God, I saw Kelsey at Rite Aid at 3 a.m. buying eggs. Not like eggs, like I'm going to make some cookies with my girlfriends at a slumber party, like eggs, I'm going to vandalize someone's house, eggs. And Downey's kind of like a small, big town, like everybody knows everybody's business, you know. I mean, you know, one of the guys in the program saw her driving down the street smoking weed from a pipe. Like, what kind of Dumbo does that? But, you know, just like, and so we, my husband and I went to the international convention, and one of, a girl I sponsored was supposed, was watching my daughter, and she was maybe 15, and she took the car, drove to her friend's house, crashed the car. The friend was a mile away, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I came home, and I was insane, and I was going to kill her. I was so insane. And I called my sponsor, and she'd already heard about the eggs, and she'd also snuck out the window. Another neighbor caught her sneaking. I mean, just bad stuff, bad, bad, bad. And so I said, yeah. She took the car, and she crashed the car, you know, blah, blah, blah. And my sponsor said, my poor baby girl. She goes, I'm going to come over there and give her some sneaking around lessons. And that lightness just made me laugh. You know, it's just like, she, poor thing, who doesn't do some bad stuff? But my poor kid can't get away with anything because I'm on her. I'm on her. I'm on her. You know, poor thing, she can't even enjoy egging someone's house without getting caught by mama. She's like, good God, right? I mean, how do you get away from under the clutches of that? I'm just like, I'm smothering her with love and affection, and it was bad. And, you know, and I was finally able to get my eyes off my kid and you know, detaching from her and the life she had. And, you know, about a year ago, she sent me, she grew up and she moved out and she met a guy. And they'd been together a full entire month, and she texted me, Mom, don't get mad, I'm pregnant. This is last year. And I know why she texted me, and I'm sure you guys do too. My husband, we'd both restaurant managers, and he was trying to get out of the restaurant business because he didn't have the great restaurant job I did. And so he mentioned it to me one time. I bit his head off because we had our whole life, you know, we both had different days off. We could be there for the kid, blah, blah, blah. And so I never thought of it again, never thought he thought of it again. And then I walk out and the neighbor says, oh, hey, I hear Mickey's getting a new job. What? And then a customer from his restaurant came into my restaurant and said, hey, I hear your husband's getting a new job. And I'm just like, what? And, you know, go to the dry cleaner. Oh, Mr. Cook, he's getting a new job, right? And I'm like, I'm like, why doesn't he talk to me? And one day I came home. I see under his bed there, like right under the bed about this far was a brown well, it was a Mervyn's bag, so it was kind of a long time ago. And I'm like, what's this? And I take the Mervyn's bag from underneath the bed, and in that Mervyn's bag, he had a pack of underwear and a pack of T-shirts that he felt he had to hide from me. $10 worth of stuff, right? How, I mean, my little, you know, my sponsor always says, if God wanted to get a message to you, how would he do it? It's in those little things where I just feel so ashamed of myself. It's just like, he had to hide $10 worth of stuff. You bought underwear? What? $10? You know, and so, of course he's not going to tell me about his new job. Shame on me, not shame on him for not telling me. Shame on me. And shame on me that my daughter has to text me. Shame on me, right? But, you know, I'm telling these things that have happened, but let me tell you, the difference is huge from how I used to be and how I am today. Huge. And I'm glad she texted me because it gave me a chance to pause, to pray, to talk to my sponsor and do an inventory on it. And, you know, I'm filled with fear. My daughter's 25. She didn't go to college. You know, she's keeping it real, working at Olive Garden 10 hours a week because, you know, that's how many hours they gave her. It's just like she can't support her. This is my version. She doesn't know how to support herself. She's living with a guy she just barely met. Finance is going to, you know, just on and on and on. And, you know, a few people knew, and they're like, oh, my God, aren't you worried about Kelsey? Yes, I am. But I was able to pray, and I was able to do an inventory, and I did a 10th step on it. And, you know, the first column, I'm resentful at Kelsey. Why? You know, because she's pregnant. How this affects me? It affects my pride because, you know, 2 days before this, I see Lori Monaco at Ralph's supermarket, and I say, how's Jillian? She goes, oh, my God, she just got her second master's. Popular girl at the party dancing, right? And Matt Donahue, he started his student teaching, so she's going over all the kids, right, and how well they're doing. How's Kelsey? Oh, keeping it real, working 10 hours a week, you know what I mean? Dropped out of school, right? I mean, I'm embarrassed. It affects my pride. What kind of mother am I? That's how I felt about it. And I get to the fourth column where we get to see my part. Well, I always expected her to be something different. You know, she used to bring home awards from school. Enthusiasm, school spirit, friendly, helpful, all those words. Big deal. You know why? I wanted her to be citizen of the month, which most hyper kids don't make that because it's a certain kind of kid that can sit there and be calm, and that's not her. I don't care. I want that to be her because if you're citizen of the month, you get a bumper sticker that says citizen of the month. You don't get a bumper sticker that says enthusiastic kid. And so I call my sponsor and and I tell her this, and she said, well, if you want a bumper sticker so bad, why don't you get one that says Norm's manager of the month? Well, because I can't get that one. That's why. I have to make my kid do it right, because I can't get that one. I'm never going to be manager of the month. That's not me. I bring enthusiasm. I bring light. I bring joy. I don't bring manager of the month, right? And I always, always wanted her to be exactly like me, and she's not me, and have my same exact path, and that's not her. And not only did it just go to her when I see my phone, this goes to everybody. You know, the week before she told me that it had been the SoCal convention, and I'm trying to make all my people go to the SoCal convention. It's like, well, why aren't you going? Well, Nancy, I have 15 kids, and, you know, I'm working two jobs. put them in the car. You're going. You know what I mean? She's like, I try to make everybody be mini Nancy Cooks. And that's not God's will. That's not God's will at all. He wants me to represent him the Nancy Cook way, you know, not anyone else's way, the way I represent him, not in what I think. You know, my sponsor once, she got real sick, and a bunch of people were taking care of her. And she was saying later on, she's like, oh, Kim, she's got a servant's heart. And I started thinking about all the things that I wasn't, right? And, you know, just feeling bad about myself. I don't have a servant's heart. You would never say Nancy Cook has a servant's heart. You'd never say citizen of the month, manager of the month. My sponsor speaks so beautifully. When she speaks, words just flow out. She can make these word pictures. She's beautiful, Cher. What do you get up there and say, oh, I'm so dumb, right? And, you know, anyway, you know, so we went to this big conference, and we were on the dance floor because we really love to dance in our little group. We've got some people that are DJs, and we love to dance. And so she heard we knew this crazy dance, like this line dance that we all did. And she kept trying to get the DJ to play the song, which he wouldn't. We forgot all about it, laughing. My sponsor was on the dance floor, and she finally, you know, and she's 15 years older than me. So, you know, she was pretty good on the dance floor, right? And I'm a little bit older, but I'm still on the dance floor. And so we go, and it's up in the mountains, and a bunch of us are going back to bed, and we stop by, and we get this icy cold water, and we're laughing. It was a crisp, clear night, and we come into this where the dorms are and have, like, this common room, and it's, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, and my sponsor's sitting like this, and she says, I want to see you dance. And I'm like, oh, my God. Nobody had the song. This was really before iPods and stuff. Like, nobody had the song. We couldn't find anybody that had it. We made so much ruckus that everyone got up out of bed, and some of them were mad. It's like, shut up. And other people were laughing. Pretty soon we have a big circle, and she's like, dance, dance. And so we start singing the song, and we're doing this stupid dance, you know, on and on. And then I finally go to bed, and right before I go to bed, I look at the schedule, and I had wanted to go on this nature walk all weekend long. It's like, I want to go on this nature walk. And so I look on the schedule. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going on the nature walk. And I'm just like, dang it, Nancy, when are you going to be disciplined? Here you are, probably 55 at the time out there dancing. When are you going to be moderation and discipline? When are you going to start growing up and getting up early and going on that nature walk, right? And so the next day at the closing meeting on Sunday, people were coming up to me and just like, oh, my God, that was so much fun last night. Yeah, yeah, I wanted to go on that nature walk. Yeah, yeah, oh, my God, it was so much fun. And, you know, the next day on Monday, I'm still beating myself up. And, you know, it's just like, why can't I be different? And I'm walking out of the gym, and I call my sponsor and I tell her everything that I just told you. When am I going to grow up? When am I going to be different? When am I going to be disciplined? When am I going to go to bed early and get up early and be a nature walker? And she says, baby, I said, we're dancers. And it was a beautiful morning. I had just done my Zumba dance class and the sun was shining on me, and I just got it for that minute, right? I am a dancer, and not just a dancer, but that's what God wants me to bring. He wants me to represent him the way that I represent him, not with the servant's heart. There's people like that represent him that way. And I really saw that. And, you know, the thing with my daughter, I was able to, when we sat down and talked, it was a beautiful talk. It was a beautiful talk. And I've supported her every second. And when I talked to normal people, they would, I would get agitated because they would push that button of fear that I already had, right? What is she going to do? They don't have much money. How are you going to raise a baby in this world? I mean, my husband and I both, blah, blah, blah. But when I talked to people in Al-Anon, here's what every single person said when I told them. God's in charge. She's going to be okay. God's in all this. You're going to be there for her. We support you. You've seen this happen over and over. And, you know, all the worst things in life I've ever had to face have never happened, ever. Yet, why don't I embrace change or what I think is difficulty? Why don't I embrace it with open arms? I guess because I'm an Al-Anon. Every time something new or something comes for me to embrace it, I'm like filled with fear. Again, it never happens. I woke up in the middle of the night last night because they didn't pay their rent. I've been pretty good for a while, but this just, you know how sometimes insanity just waits for you? You just be unsuspecting and go to the bathroom. It's just like, what if they get kicked out? Where's she going to go? I don't try to think like that. So this ran through my head for a little bit. But it soon passed. I've been free of it all day long today, because today she has a place to live, right? Today everything's okay. And I love this program because it makes me feel okay, and it makes me feel good, and it makes me feel loved. And I'm really grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share.